This podcast is brought to you by fin24.com.
Welcome to Metal Hits. I'm David Mackay, the editor of Mining Max, and today we're going to be looking at two top stories. The first one is the announcement from Xstrata, the UK-listed mining company, that it would press ahead with the expansion of its ferrochrome project, the Lime Project, at a capital cost of about 5 billion rands. My colleague Andre Jansen van Furen will be following that one. But first, I want to look at an interesting development. It involves the mineral rights or the minerals lawyer, Hume Scholes, who has been taking a paper around Johannesburg to various banks and other clients on what's really happening with government and nationalization. And the contention is that nationalization, contrary to what government says, is alive and well. Brendan.
Yeah, David, it is pretty stirring stuff. And Hume, you know, your talk is called The Road to Nationalization of the South African Mining Industry, and you've been giving it to mining companies, banks, and interested people over the last few weeks. And you know, if I could sum it up in a few words, basically you're saying the mining industry needs to catch a wake-up call fast because nationalization is happening, despite denials by President Zuma and Minister of Mining Susan Shibangu. Could you tell us why that is?
Brendan, I believe that nationalization is more than a debate within the corridors of power in minerals and energy and the ANC. That concrete steps have already been taken towards a nationalization policy in South Africa. And that is being done, in my view, through the debate on a state mining company, which I believe is a way that ultimately nationalization, if we want to call it that, or rather radical state intervention in the industry, will take place through the state mining company.
Right. Now, one of your key points, Hume, is that you don't think the mining industry is fully up to speed with this. They're not aware of the danger and they're not doing enough to get their point of view across to government. Is that correct?
Brendan, there are two answers to that. There are two answers to that question, both in the affirmative. The first one is that there have been 2 days of parliamentary portfolio committee hearings during May of this year on a state mining company. The only interest groups that presented were the National Union of Mine Workers, the ANC Youth League, and the South African Mining Development Association. Industry, through the Chamber of Mines or otherwise, made no representations to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. So they get a very one-sided view of a nationalisation debate, and in fact, they only get a pro-nationalisation debate. The second answer to your question is that the formation of the so-called African Exploration Mining Finance Company, which had certain exemptions gazetted in October 2008, is a state company which can apply, if I can use that term loosely, for prospecting and mining rights without the necessity to go through the formal application procedures that anybody else would have to. So this wholly owned state mining company already has a massive competitive edge in obtaining prospecting rights and mining rights, which is a slow form or more subtle form of nationalization.
And Hume, your follow-up point there is that the next stage is the state mining company which will take over the AEMF, and you're highlighting that state company as the state mining company as the vehicle through which nationalization will take place.
Correct. At one of the presentations by NUM, one of the suggestions by NUM at the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee hearings in May was that ultimately this state mining company will swallow up the AEMF with all the rights that it has. Now, recently, Brendan, I think on Friday last week, I read in the business report that the AEMF had been granted a number of prospecting rights and mining rights for coal in Mpumalanga province. And as I said earlier, they've got a huge competitive advantage because this state company does not have to go through the normal procedures under Section 16, 20, 22, etc. of the MPRD Act to obtain these rights.
Okay. Now, Hume, the Chamber of Mines over the last 5-6 years has made its point of view known on certain aspects of mining legislation, but hasn't succeeded in getting it across to government. Why do you think that is?
Brendan, I think the Chamber is obviously a conglomerate of various mining companies that have different interests. The Chamber is only as good as those who fund it and those who are members of it. I do believe, notwithstanding that, The Chamber is, in my view, a discredited organization because it's been around for so long, and I do think the government sees it as a bit of a relic of the apartheid era in this country. And I think for that reason, with the nationalization debate, effective and constructive engagement with government on the nationalization debate should take place through a new medium or by mining companies themselves.
And, you know, I've been saying for some time the mining companies haven't been forthright enough in stating publicly their viewpoints on the various aspects and issues affecting them. Would you go along with that?
Most definitely. And, Brendan, it's just fear. It's fear that the government will exact some form of retribution from a mining company which confronts them. Because mining companies have got conversions in the pipeline, they have applications for new prospecting rights and mining rights, and they don't want to say anything or do anything that irritates government out of the fear that their rights might be rejected or that their conversions may be delayed or that they may be sort of victimized in any other way by government, to be quite frank.
Sure. I mean, overall, Hume, you're painting a very, very depressing picture of the state of our mining industry and the regulatory environment it works in, and you are an expert in this. I mean, you've been doing this for years.
Brendan, just out of experience, I do believe the industry is too apathetic and rolls over in its engagement with government on really, really important issues. Mm. I mean, the codes of good practice which were promulgated in April last year are a completely unworkable document. It doesn't hang together. It's ambiguous, the codes. You don't really know when you read those codes what you have to do. The government ignored all the comments given on the codes by the chamber on behalf of industry, and then ultimately just promulgated whatever they want to promulgate without taking into account any of those comments. So my concern is, and why I am on this crusade, if you want to call it that, to tell the industry to wake up and start engaging, not only the industry, but the banks too, capital, to start engaging with government on this nationalization debate and not be apathetic. And educate the state, educate the government. Politicians are not always educated in economics and how the industry hangs together. Educate them on the consequences of nationalization. And at the risk of repeating myself, at the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee hearings on a state mining company, there was a very one-sided view in favor of nationalization put forward by NUM and put forward by the ANC Youth League without there being any input by industry or the chamber or anyone else on what the horrific economic consequences would be of this country if there was nationalization of the industry in whatever form.
Hume, thank you very much for that very incisive assessment of what's going on, and I hope your message is taken to heart by the people that you're talking to.
So, Brendan, that was Hume. Look, an outspoken guy, he always has been, but that's quite interesting info, don't you think?
David, it's fascinating. I mean, his assessment of what's going on is completely at odds with the standard line put out by the mining industry, which is that they have this it's called MIGDET, the Mining Industry Task Team, which has been set up between government, labor, and the mining industry to transform the industry and make it more competitive and you know, just improve things. And you know, a lot of people are banking on that happening. And now Hume's come along with a completely different take, which says that the mining industry is being set up, that nationalization is a serious consideration despite the denials from, amongst others, President Zuma and Minister Shibangu. It's a very, very worrying assessment, and I hope the people he's talking to take it to heart.
Well, lovely stuff. Okay, we'll keep an eye on that one. Well, thanks, Brendan. André Jansen van Vuren, as mentioned earlier, you've been following this story on the Lime Project. Can you give us a bit of background before we chat to D'Andrea?
Yes, David. Xstrata today announced that it will go ahead with the second phase of its Lion Ferrochrome complex, involving the construction and commissioning of a 360,000-ton capacity extension to the smelter. This will increase Xstrata's total ferrochrome production capacity to over 2.3 million ton. And with us on the line to discuss the expansion is Xstrata's Dion Dreyer.
Good day, Dion, and thanks for joining us.
Good day, André, and good to be with you.
Dion, this project was initially put on hold for a lack of a firm commitment by Eskom for energy security. Has Xstrata now received the guarantees that it was looking for?
Yes, Andre, what initially happened, we proposed the Lion Complex as a project with three phases to Eskom, which was then approved, which would have given a total of 1 million tons of ferrochrome. And for the first phase was completed, then for Lion 2, we actually had board approval in 2008. But then we ran into two problems. In the first instance, it was the problem with the blackouts from Eskom side, and it became clear there was a problem with the availability of electricity. And then we, of course, also had the financial crisis that hit the world. So what we did was we put Lion 2 on ice, and since then we've been keeping an eye on the market, but also very much speaking to Eskom regarding the availability of electricity. And they have now made a firm commitment to supply us with 120 MVA, with the connection date being from the beginning of 2013. So effectively we've delayed the project by about, say, 2.5 years. And the big difference is that Medupi, that really coincide with Medupi's first phase coming online end of 2012. Then if we have the connection from the beginning of 2013, we plan to be in a position to commission during the first half of 2013. So we have got that commitment from Eskom. We've signed it, we've agreed to it, and we're ready to move forward now.
Xstrata wouldn't have launched this project without being optimistic on the prospects of the ferrochrome and, by implication, the stainless steel market. What will, in your opinion, be, you know, the key drivers of demand?
The reality is, it's well known that most of ferrochrome, 90% of ferrochrome, goes into stainless steel, and stainless steel is still a very strong growing commodity. It's mainly on the back of the urbanization that's taking place in China. There's a big demand for stainless steel. If you look at the growth rates for stainless steel, traditionally it's been running more than 5%. We had a fantastic year in 2008 before the world came to a standstill, as it did in everything, but it's recovered very strongly now. 2010 will be the highest production for stainless steel ever. And all the analysts, all the experts are forecasting very strong growth going forward. So on the demand side, we see a very good picture. It's not only China, we're also seeing India, the good growth in the per capita consumption of stainless steel. So it's quite clear for us that the demand will be there. And the reality is, on the supply side, the fundamentals have changed in that the barriers to entry has become a lot higher. But traditionally, there was always a lot of ore available in South Africa, a lot of electricity available. That has changed, and it's not just in South Africa, it's really worldwide. The availability of good quality ore is becoming more scarce, and also the availability of electricity. So we see a very tight market developing going forward, and we will be ready to supply into that with Lion 2.
Dion, the almost 5 billion rand price tag that's attached to the project, how will that be funded?
Most of the funding will actually be from Xstrata Alloys' own internal cash flows, and then the shortfall will be funded from Xstrata PLC from Switzerland.
That was Dion Dreyer. Dion, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks very much, Andre, for that interview, and thanks to Brendan on the early story on nationalization. That's it from Metalheads this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. Join us again next week. Until then, goodbye.